Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
I was flipping through the channels the other day, but there was nothing good on, I had nothing to play. So I went to my computer and realized that there was so much content before my eyes. But there's nothing but Netflix in my heart and on my screen. There's always something good that I still haven't seen. But maybe one day we can try and watch the rest.
Yeah, that's right. We are back for Nothing But Netflix. And today we're talking about the brand new J-Lo documentary over on Netflix. It's called Halftime. And I hope you're ready to say, let's get loud here with the star of Nothing But Netflix, Chappelle.
Rob, what? You, why have you never sang the Nothing But Netflix theme song?
Why have I never sang? I don't know if I know all the words. I was flipping through the channels the other day when there was nothing good on. I had nothing to play. So I went to my computer and realized that there was so much content before my eyes. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I got it.
Yes, I like that. Mm-hmm. Ring the bell. Yeah. Rob. Yeah, it's very fun. I like when you sing the theme songs on other people's, like on the other podcasts that you do. Like when you do Talk with T-Bird, that makes me very happy. Mm-hmm. You've done the Know-It-Alls, but this is the first time that you've done Nothing But Netflix, and I really enjoyed that.
Okay, well, maybe we'll make it a sing-along, just like J-Lo had all those young girls singing during the Super Bowl halftime show.
Exactly. Like people, listen, for the last 20 or 30 years, people have been telling you that you're not that great of a singer. You're not that great of a dancer. Mm-hmm. You're not that great of an actor. But Rob, I think you could do all of them if you wanted to, honestly. Yes. Like J-Lo, you could have it all.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about it all here today with an honest to goodness J-Lo expert who is here. Okay. Let's welcome in.
Welcome back.
Yeah. We most recently talked about The Floor is Lava, and like the lava, things are going to stay hot as we talk about Jennifer Lopez here with Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back on Nothing But Netflix to talk about my good pal Jennifer Lopez. I'm very, very excited to be here and talk about Halftime.
Amanda, this is such an interesting thing. Maybe one of the most interesting facts that we've come to know about you, maybe less so than that you are a competitive eater, that you are a J-Lo super fan. How did this happen?
So, okay, I can explain my J-Lo credentials here for the audience. And this is actually this, I came to be invited on this episode because I had reached out to Chappelle and said, you know, J-Lo is kind of my jam. I would love to come on and talk about Halftime when that gets released. So I was very grateful that Chappelle tagged me for that. I think J-Lo is one of those celebrities that has always occupied a very special place in my heart. I followed her early career. I remember her as a Fly Girl, and like I really kind of idolized the Fly Girls. If people watched any of In Living Color in the 1990s, it was a sketch comedy show that I really liked, and it had this awesome dance troupe. You see a little bit.
She was your favorite Fly Girl?
I sort of loved all of the Fly Girls. I just sort of looked up to them as like an entity. But then like J-Lo was the one that took off, you know, so she like then went off to have a career. And I would say she was one of my top, you know, she like there was a mix of different Fly Girls through the ages. She was always one of my favorites. So I loved her as a Fly Girl. I was really excited in her early film career. I thought her early films were excellent. And I think that she just imprinted on my brain at this time where it's like, you know how like there's certain people that like are around you like early in your life and they kind of imprint in your brain and you think of them as like Bryce talks about like somebody's his family in his head. It's like J-Lo, I feel like she was like, I don't know if she's like an aunt or like a cousin or something, but like I have this familial overwhelming love for J-Lo. I had a boyfriend in high school. I used to tell him he looked exactly like J-Lo. Like, I just love J-Lo. I love everything about J-Lo. I didn't follow all of her career, like, after the early 90s super closely. And, like, you know, I don't think every movie she made was a hit. But I just will always have this, like, tremendous love and respect for this woman.
Can I just circle back to you had a boyfriend in high school that told you look like J-Lo?
No, I told him he looked like J-Lo.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. He looked like J-Lo. A beautiful man.
I thought he had a very beautiful face, and I think that her face just like embodied like perfect structure to me. Like other people have not made this connection that I made that he looked like J-Lo, but it just kind of shows how large of a figure she loomed in my brain.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for all that. Chappelle, on a scale of Akiva to Dr. Amanda, are you in the J-Lo stand-up?
I'm definitely closer to Dr. Amanda. I don't have any negative feelings about J-Lo at all. And, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart for J-Lo as well. I would love to date someone who looks like J-Lo. Like, oh, dear God, send her to me. But I won't lie. She wasn't my favorite Fly Girl. I'm a big Carrie Ann Inaba guy, you know, personally. But whatever. That's neither here nor there. But I'm from Texas. And J-Lo was Salinas. She is Salinas. You know, like, anything for Salinas, that is a Texas staple. It's especially in Black neighborhoods. Like, I really need to investigate this and like to find out that the government just dropped like a box of VHSs into like the hood, and like, because we all have seen the Selena movie a billion times. And so that was my introduction to J-Lo. And then of course the music happened, and you know, she was a dancer, of course, but like when she started to make music, she really went straight into like kind of like this hip hop R&B kind of era too. She had a pop era, and then she had her like Latina music as well. So she's hit all these different eras of music, and I was there for much of it, you know. And so maybe less there for a lot of the movies, but even some of the movies have like made a real big mark on me. And so I was happy to talk about J-Lo, and I'm also happy to talk about Halftime. I mean, this is kind of my neck of the woods, so I feel very at home with this topic.
So when you say that you're excited to talk about Halftime, it's your neck of the woods. Super Bowl halftime shows?
I've talked about this before, Rob.
Oh, yes, that's right. Two. Yeah, okay. I forgot about that connection.
Yeah, I've been on the other side of this. So I've been where we're seeing parts of that I've experienced. And so it's very fun to kind of relive that moment, you know, even where there's parts where we see like the little girls that she brings out on stage with her, the dancers and stuff, and how excited they were for that moment. And I can remember how I felt being on this like stage in front of all these people and thinking, wow, like I'm gonna be able to tell this story forever. I got to do it twice, but you know, it was very, very much something that it felt like a once in a lifetime opportunity. So I'm happy to talk about this.
Yeah. And I have overall positive feelings towards J-Lo. I wouldn't say that I am anywhere near a J-Lo stan, but I'm certainly not a J-Lo hater.
Yeah. I'll add, like, despite the overwhelming love that I have for J-Lo, I it's not that I can't be critical of, you know, some aspects of her career. I think that she, you know, very questionable taste in men, J-Lo, series of rocky relationships. She's had some really bad film choices. Like, I don't think that there's, you know, it's not like it's all been all hits, but I think that she's an interesting complex yeah. person that will be really great to talk about.
And so the halftime documentary, if you haven't watched it, is interesting to note that this was a sort of autobiographical examination of Jennifer Lopez, that this was, not a critical eye towards Jennifer Lopez.
A hagiography, if you will. A
hagiography, for sure. And so, this was very much Jennifer Lopez as, Jennifer Lopez has seen her story over the years and not the story of Jennifer Lopez as portrayed by pop culture over these last 25 some odd years. So certainly interesting to get that perspective on Jennifer Lopez. And we'll talk about that and much more here today.
Yeah, which is nice because we do hear throughout this documentary that, yeah, much of what we know about J-Lo, we've heard through the tabloids and through, gossip and, social media. But rarely do we hear J-Lo talking about J-Lo. And so now we get J-Lo's perspective of how it felt to be the butt of so many jokes in the 90s.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there. But yeah, well, you know what I'm saying? Like, she was very much somebody who, like, she was talked about so much, And so this is her kind of her moment to say, well, I'm much more than, this South Park character hand puppet that you wanted to make me, or, like these SNL skits. Like, I have things that I care about that are more than just these performances. And so we get a peek into how she feels about some of that. And I really enjoyed it.
What was Trey Parker's big problem with Jennifer Lopez? Like, it seems like South Park went so hard on Jennifer Lopez.
Get off her neck. Yeah. Right. But you know what? I mean, just looking back at the, career and the, documentary does a good job of, like, reminding you about, like, every or a lot of the big tent poles in J-Lo's career. If people felt like in the early 2000s, like, oh, J-Lo is just, famous for being famous and she has no talent, like, wait till you see who the next 20 years is gonna bring to the forefront of pop culture.
Yeah. We literally have, like, Netflix shows dedicated to people who are famous on another platform. That's it. I'm famous on TikTok, so I get a television show. Yeah. These people have not produced anything that we are listening to or consuming or, like, for entertainment, making money or helping anybody. A lot of times, I won't say that about all of them, but a lot of times it's very much self-serving, taking selfies and dancing in the mirror and stuff like that. And J-Lo was actually out here producing content, a lot of content, movies and songs and like television show appearances. She's a dancer. She's very talented. And so for people to, like, kind of hold this over her head of all people, it's comical looking back now because of what we have right now. And you're right. It was just something that I feel like if I was, like, a media personality or something like that, and I watched this, I would feel like crap. Because that, like, there's clips of, like, Jimmy Fallon, not so much Jimmy Fallon, but definitely Jimmy Kimmel, making, like, a joke. And there's other clips of, like, random people making jokes too.
I think Letterman, Conan. Yeah.
Like, all the big names were talking trash about J-Lo, who was just minding her own business. And so it's kind of like, yeah, looking back, we probably could dial some of that back if they had the chance. I'm sure they would do some take backs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, and you can say, like, what you will about, like, not every one of J-Lo's endeavors, like, was, a 5-star event. Like, she didn't hit with everything, but this woman is extremely ambitious, extremely hardworking, and she's very talented. Maybe not the greatest singer, maybe not the best musician in the world, but, like, this, she has a lot of talent, and she really, she really worked tremendously hard. And, and I think that she's, that there's a lot to be, like, respected about her career and, like, being a Latina woman, like, to break out at the time that she did. Like, I think Selena was the highest grossing, like, the highest paid Latina actress had ever made for a film. So, like, she was groundbreaking in her way. And she really, like, you can tell that the fact that she didn't get the respect that she thought she deserved has been something that's really haunted her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that that this documentary really, where, much of J-Lo's criticism of the media was talking about that, a lot of news stories and discussion about, who she is dating and when, that really the film did not touch on that at all. And her then boyfriend. I'm not sure if they were fiance.
I was talking about
A-Rod.
A-Rod,
she was very much dating during the time of that this all took place. Gets an offer for A-Rod. Does not appear. Ben Affleck at least got a confessional.
Yeah, and he's one of the few that, I mean, he is the one that got a confessional, right? Like, they talk about how many people she dated and all this other stuff, but, like, Ben is the only one who got to speak on it.
And not about their relationship, just about, like, how tough the criticism was of her. She did not want her personal life at the center of this documentary. She wanted this to be about her career. Like, that was the message that she wanted to get across. Like, I want to talk about the work that I've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they said an interesting line, like some of the criticism was that she's a celebrity, not a performer. And I'm just like, but she's a celebrity because she's a performer. And that's very different than a lot of the celebrities we have today. They're celebrities because they were either born famous or rich or whatever. And then they've now let their celebrity take them to the next level, you know, using whatever talents they have for networking and marketing and stuff like that. But J-Lo was always a performer. Like, she was a dancer and a singer when she first started out, and she wanted to be an actress. Like, at no point was she just like, oh, I'm just attached to some celebrity and now you know me. You know, it was the other way around. And so for people to center her love life, like in a lot of the conversations about her, is not fair, because you can't think of a lot of people who are not Latina women who they've done that to. You know, there's probably a lot of actresses that you could probably say, well, why do you keep getting work? Actors, too. Like, I still don't understand the appeal of Kevin Costner, but like, he keeps getting work and nobody's talking about it. Yeah, exactly. So I'm just saying, J-Lo, she got a raw deal for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting, the film is set against the backdrop of J-Lo performing at the 2019 Super Bowl, even though it's February 2020.
Didn't Akiva have a take on, I think that this was a NGOG argument about what you call this.
Yes.
I was on that episode, a Super Bowl episode of NGOG, and I believe I did a Fincerton type situation.
Yeah, 2019 season Super Bowl, basically the last Super Bowl before COVID. I really feel like that the film does not really acknowledge that basically it's about J-Lo's very tumultuous February of 2020, which leaves out the coronavirus pandemic about the strike.
We were all having a time, Jenny.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, but if you thought you were having a bad 2020, wait till you hear about J-Lo. Didn't even get an Academy Award nomination for Hustlers.
She wore a mask once.
I was just gonna say that the backdrop was against her performing halftime with Shakira at the Super Bowl between the 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs, and also against the backdrop of award season for Hustlers. I'm sorry, go ahead, Amanda.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, I think that the things that you could say about like where this documentary like might not have been successful or might have been like, might leave you with like a question mark is, you know, it's like selling, like even everything we've said about J-Lo, that she didn't get critical respect. It's like selling J-Lo as this great underdog, like given like the celebrity that she is, like there's times where you could think a little bit like, woe is me, J-Lo, like, okay, you're like the biggest celebrity in the world, but you don't have an Oscar yet. Like, there's a little bit of like,
where is her EGOT?
With like that sob story, I think it's like your mileage may vary with how much that touches your heart.
Yes, I totally agree. I thought that it was a little too much on the, you know, whether it was the Hollywood Foreign Press or the Academy, felt like that we really delved into J-Lo's grievances with not getting enough accolades for her best supporting actress work in Hustlers.
I'll be fair to J-Lo a little bit here. I think it was more like they wanted us to see the emotional toll that took on her. She wasn't so much complaining about like, oh, I should have won. It was more like, let me show you the roller coaster ride I went on. So I did this thing. I went out on a limb and did this like very controversial topic, right? Like it's like we're putting pole dancers and strippers at the front of this story, but in an empowering way, which is something that we don't see a lot. And so she's like also a woman of color. And so she's really stepping out on a limb here. And this is like a J-Lo produced like property.
Yeah,
as well.
She was the producer.
Yeah. And so she does the thing. So she's already worried about it. It gets all this acclaim. And then she's like, oh, okay. I think they actually like it. And so for the first time since what, Selena, she's getting like acknowledgement for a role in such a big way to where people are like, oh yeah, award season coming around. She's the guy. So she's the gal, mm-hmm. you know, it's coming. And so then she starts to say like, well, I don't really think I'm a win, but people start saying, no, you're the front runner. And then she goes and she loses to Laura Dern, which, you know, Laura Dern, respectable loss to take right there. Mm-hmm. But then, so she's like, you know what? I probably am not going to win these things. But then she goes and she wins another award from like the LA Screen Actors Guild, mm-hmm. or whatever. And so she's like, wait, so am I back? Are we doing this? Are we going to win? And people are hyping her up to where when she finally doesn't win, she's like, I didn't think I was going to win, but y'all made me think I was going to win. So now I feel kind of sad about it. So yeah, I think that's more of the journey.
She doesn't get nominated for an Oscar. And that was exactly. A big injury on nomination day. And I will say, bad move for the Academy here. This, like, in the best actress supporting category, it's all white women across mm-hmm. the board here. So, and I think this might have been the Oscars that, that Jada Smith boycotted because of the Academy.
Oscar's so white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they end up doing the Oscars in 2020? Or happened pre-COVID? Let's take a look at that.
I think it might have happened.
That sounds like pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm. I think it might have happened pre-COVID. I'm not sure. I see a picture of Laura Dern accepting an Oscar, but I don't know if this was like the full thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and you can tell with
Star
J-Lo,
of Jurassic World Dominion.
Yeah.
Will she win another supporting actress Oscar?
Yeah. When not J-Lo, J-Lo overlooked for halftime. Again, story of her life.
Yeah.
So she, I mean, like the thing you definitely see in, like throughout this like narrative of like looking forward to the Oscars and will she get nominated? It's like, she's has this sort of like, I don't know. I feel like I can relate to her so hard. Like, I'm a perfectionist. Like, I feel disappointed in myself if I don't achieve like the thing that is the thing in my field that I'm supposed to do. Like, I hold myself to those standards. So I feel J-Lo so much with this. I feel like she's doing a lot of like humble bragging and false humility, like on the way there, where she's like, but then I will get the nomination. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, it would be embarrassing to lose in this dress. And then she's going to go and lose in that dress. So, you know, I think she really had her heart set on this. You could tell how much this meant to her. And, you know, this was like a big disappointment. So it's like, it's centered around award season. It's also centered around the halftime, her halftime show. And the other thing that this documentary like really tees up is that getting the halftime show is like this really big pinnacle of J-Lo's career. And I wonder, from our halftime expert Chappelle, like, is getting the halftime show like the pinnacle of your career as a performing artist?
Ooh, I mean, there are not many bigger stages than the halftime show. I know that the halftime show I did when I was in college with the Black Eyed Peas / and Usher, that broke the record for like most televised concert or whatever, like the world record. And so, and I'm assuming they break them every year. Like, I'm assuming that they have more viewers every time it happens. So I don't know if you can get a bigger audience than the Super Bowl halftime show, honestly. And mm-hmm. if you think about the other people who've done the halftime show, there have been some clunkers. There have been, but like, you know, Michael Jackson, Prince, Beyonce, like they're big names there. And so for J-Lo to feel like I'm in that same conversation as those people, such a big deal, honestly. I doubt that when she started performing, she ever thought like, I need to do that. Like, but it isn't it like one of those like things that you just dream about, right? Like, you're like, man, one day that could be me. Like, I got hits. I could dance. I would have all the things. I'd have stripper poles and cages and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, so her whole career, she's probably been idolizing that moment and thinking about what it could be like. And then to finally have it like, presented to her as an opportunity. Yeah, I think it is a very big deal for her.
Just to go back to the Academy Awards in 2020. Mm. So Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the 49ers, that was on February 2nd of 2020. And then the Academy Awards were the next weekend, which was February 9th. So they did have the in-person Academy Awards, but you know that at least in my mind, the specter of COVID was really, you know, mm-hmm. over J-Lo goes to the doctor at one point and he's like, oh, mm-hmm. respiratory infection. I'm like, it was COVID. J-Lo had it.
J-Lo was the one who brought COVID. She probably, the Super Bowl was probably a super spreader event.
As you both were talking about the event being like a pinnacle in J-Lo's career. Yeah, it seems interesting that I wonder if there were like parallels for J-Lo. I'm not sure if anybody even cares about the Grammys, but did she look at the Super Bowl as sort of like an acknowledgement of her musical career in the same way she was looking at the Oscars as the acknowledgement of her film career?
Yeah, probably. I mean, they happened within a week of each other. So, and it was when she had turned 50. And so it was kind of all like lining up in that way where it kind of felt like this is her coronation in a way. And so, you know, she did the Super Bowl performance. It went well, clearly based on this. But, you know, I think she would have really liked that thing with the Oscars to work out, at least a nomination, because quite frankly, with you nominating all white women for this award, J-Lo has played plenty of white women in movies, plenty. And so she could have been nominated. She could have done it. If she wanted to be a white woman in a movie, she could do it. I've seen a lot of J-Lo's movies and she'd be a white lady a lot of times. Her and Halle Berry have a really good, like, they got a really good skill set for just deciding to be white in these movies sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if J-Lo talks about, like, from the time that she was a little girl and, like, how she always thought about her career as wanting to be that, like, triple threat, the singer, the dancer, the actress, and, like, this is really, like, the between the Super Bowl halftime special and, like, Hustlers being a hit, it's, like, really, like, this is her firing on all cylinders. Like, she gets to really put on her like one woman show.
Yeah. You know, the problem is there's no award that really celebrates that triple threatdom. I mean, she's like a triple crown winner. I mean, is there anybody else if we were going to be drafting triple threats?
Oh, drafting triple threats. So like the singer, dancer, actor. I'm trying to think of other pop stars who have had successful acting careers.
Yeah, and then it's like it's got to be a single dancer actor, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like maybe like Lady Gaga, maybe.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh,
Lady,
yeah, she's, yeah.
Yeah, so you, yeah. You certainly put her into the draft. That I feel like Beyonce doesn't have the film accolades. That
she's an Oscar-nominated actress, right? For Dreamgirls, I believe. I'm pretty sure.
I just feel like she doesn't work as much as an actress.
That's true. I wouldn't consider her an actress, although she has had some good acting roles.
Gold member.
She was in Cadillac Records, I believe, is the one where she was Etta James. Right. So she wasn't nominated for Idris Elba, also,
right?
Yeah. No, that we don't acknowledge that movie.
Yeah, I mean that's like the Broadway musical sort of skill set. Mm-hmm. So I mean but like in terms of our like big pop crossover stars, I do think that J-Lo is like definitely one of the top in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm just trying to think of like another good performer, like a woman performer, because I think of a couple men off the top of my head, maybe like a Jamie Foxx is like a singer performer, but I think he's other like actor, but I think he's in like a
Will Smith,
like a comedian more. Yeah, I don't know. Will did music for sure. I think it's the dancing aspect that's probably a little off. Yeah, like that throws people off. Yeah. So it'd probably be hard. So I think J-Lo has a legit argument for why people should be kinder to her, at least when it comes to her career, because she's doing things that the girls aren't doing.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of her problem, where she is like, she does so many things because she crosses so many different industries that I feel like that she doesn't get, you know, celebrated enough in any one thing. And I feel like that sort of like diminishes her. Like if you compare her only to other actresses, then you say, well, there are all these other actresses that are better. Or if you compare her only to other musicians, but she can do all of them.
Yeah. She does all of it and she looks fabulous doing it. Like this woman is like ageless in terms of like not only her beauty, but her athleticism. Like the stuff that she can still do on the stage is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The stuff that she can still do on the stage is amazing. Like that's super. I was like, wow. Okay. I went and saw Hustlers after that. I was like, okay, let's do it. There's something there. Give her the Oscar. At least not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that one scene in Hustlers is extremely impressive. Shit fell. You know what I'm talking about.
And I was impressed.
We're For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
I want to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl of it all,
yes.
Where, you know, the film paints it from J-Lo's perspective of a huge slight to J-Lo, to that that as told through the documentary, that the NFL getting a lot of negative press about Colin Kaepernick at the time, they wanted to do a Super Bowl halftime show in Miami that they felt like would be representative for the Miami crowd. And J-Lo felt like that it was insulting to basically that they needed to bring in not one, but two Latina performers to be in the Super Bowl halftime show in both her and Shakira.
This is the big story coming out of this documentary, that J-Lo was salty that she had to share the stage with Shakira. And the premise of this is that there's like a headliner, there's one person, they get the show, they get the time. It's not enough time to split with other artists. Now, I was looking at the history of the Super Bowl halftime show, yes, to see like, and there is like a run, especially. So first it's all marching bands for like a long time. And then, mm-hmm, I think it's the 90s or the 80s when they start doing these pop music acts. And let me pull this up now. But there's like these, there's Michael Jackson, I think, was one of the first, mm-hmm, ones. You get like some, you know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, The Who, some of those like classic rock bands. And then there's like a long stretch of just these big, like super group acts with like a bunch of different artists, that are billed like a mix together. Like Miami Sound Machine is in there a few times. There's a bunch of times that did several artists feature. Like famously, we all remember Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake, mm-hmm, and they were they were two of many performers. So there was a long tradition of the halftime show being like a showcase for multiple performers. But then there were a few halftime shows leading up to J-Lo where there was only one headliner billed. Like Beyonce had her own billing, if you look up halftime shows, but she does perform with Bruno Mars and Coldplay. So even Beyonce, who had most of the time in that halftime show, also shared the stage with other performers. So it seems to be pretty typical for a Super Bowl halftime show. I mean, we just remember the last halftime show where we had, all of the classic hip hop performers. I don't know if she should have been as blindsided and offended by this choice as she was.
So I had been seeing the discourse as well this week leading up to the show. And so when I watched the show, I was like kind of like going in, already had a preconceived notion that she was like, okay, you tripping, because I've done the Super Bowl before with multiple people, so I know how, mm-hmm, it works, right? Mm-hmm. But then when she said it, she did say like it's normally brought to one big artist and then they can choose if they want to have, right, an ensemble, mm-hmm, cast, you know? And so like when they had the Janet Jackson Super Bowl, it was Janet Jackson, P. Diddy, Murphy Lee, Kid Rock, and Justin Timberlake, and, yeah, the U of H marching band and the Texas Southern University marching band. And so the headliner was Janet Jackson. There was just 18,000 other people on stage too, including myself. And so then when I did the Super Bowl in college, it was very much the Black Eyed Peas were the headliner. Usher and Slash were the like accompaniment. And so, you know, although Usher is somebody who probably could demand a stage by themselves, same thing with Slash, honestly. The Black Eyed Peas were the headliner. And so when she puts it like that, yeah, if you go to J-Lo and say, this is your halftime show, would you like to have extra people? Would you like to have Shakira? Right. Would you like to have such and such? Or go to Shakira and say the same thing. So I do think she had a legit argument with that, because you did have the opportunity to give her. I don't know if she would be the first Latino woman to have that stage, but if she was, like, that's a good opportunity to give that to her, and they didn't. So I could see where the argument got, but I know that once you start to disseminate that information on the internet, it just kind of spirals into like, oh, look at J-Lo being a diva again, just wanting her own and salty about Shakira. She's not half the singer that Shakira is. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. You know? And so I think you could give her a little grace with that one, because it does make sense if you look through it through that lens.
Now,
yeah.
Was this a thing at the time? Was anybody in February 2020 talking about like the audacity of the NFL to double book Shakira and Jennifer Lopez?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't think this was the very first I heard of it. And it actually like really like sort of broke my heart, because I also have like a really strong like affiliation with Shakira.
Oh,
like I love,
yes.
Shakira. I love Shakira too. So I was like, don't make me choose, mom. Don't make me choose. But so I think, and I think to her credit, like even though J-Lo is like not happy about this, like she does like offer to Shakira that we will split the time, and she like does seem to like kind of suck it up and be a good sport about it. But I thought that the show like featuring both of them was actually really great. Like I thought what came of it was so great. So it was a little bit disheartening to hear that this was like something that J-Lo didn't feel good about, and that she didn't feel like she had control over, and that it felt like a slight to her.
Yeah. Chappelle, I felt like that the Shakira erasure in halftime was very real. I feel like they had like they showed like one conversation with Shakira. I went back, I watched the Super Bowl halftime show, and you know, when they showed the performance, they didn't even show 1 second of Shakira. And Shakira gets like the first, you know, 6 minutes of the or 7 minutes of the 14-minute thing. Like it was almost like that they were like sisters, where it's like, all right, you stay on your side of the room and I'll stay on my side of the room and you do your thing, and then I'll come on and I'll do my thing.
Yeah. And I don't think that's out of the ordinary for the Super Bowl, honestly. Like I said, in the Janet Jackson thing, it was very much everybody was in their own lane. You kind of stay in front of your own stage, and then at the end, you have Janet and Justin kind of doing their duet together. Mm-hmm. But at no point was Janet over there with Kid Rock. It, like, I don't think they even met each other, and hopefully she did not meet him. And so, same thing with the Black Eyed Peas. Like, the Black Eyed Peas did their thing, and at some point, they get out the way. Usher's and Slash are on stage. He's dancing, come off the stage. Black Eyed Peas are back up there. So you really don't have to show Shakira. Also, this isn't about her. It's about J-Lo. And so it's called halftime, but it's really only about the
it was half the time. Yeah.
Half of the halftime. Right. Yeah. So it made sense for them to kind of cut Shakira out of that, because also Shakira could do her own. She could do her this same exact documentary from her point of view, I'm sure.
I want to see it. No, I had in my notes that Shakira got 6 minutes of the halftime special, and J-Lo wasn't going to give her another minute in the documentary. Like, she really, like, you didn't see any of her performance. Like, you have her on the phone, there's like one like brief rehearsal, but it's like you blink and you miss Shakira in this film. Like, J-Lo did not want to give that woman any more screen time.
That's it. Ooh. She got half the halftime show. That's it.
She did. And that's all she needed, because it turned out great. And then we get this work of art here on Netflix. But we also, like, there's room for Shakira to do hers. But I do have a fun fact for y'all.
Yes.
Oh.
So you know about the connection between In Living Color and the Super Bowl?
What is it? Did In Living Color premiere after a Super Bowl?
No. So in 1993, I know this because I tweeted about it last year when it happened. But when I was thinking about it, when it was on front of my mind, because basically what happens is the Super Bowl halftime show was getting no play. Like, nobody, like, it was boring. Yeah. Nobody was watching it. So they Fox like decided to air In Living Color in the middle of it, right? Like, in the middle of the halftime show, and they got all these viewers, like over 20 million viewers just flocked to Fox for a halftime. And so the Super Bowl people were like, well, why are we doing this? If like people are going to watch something in the middle, they should be watching us. And so the following year for the Super Bowl, Michael Jackson gave that.
Oh,
Super Bowl
performance, wow.
And it's been a thing ever since. And so funny enough, J-Lo has bookends with the Super Bowl and In Living Color as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. I thought you were going to mention the men on football sketch, but I don't think that holds up today.
We didn't need to talk about that.
So that's really interesting. So J-Lo is bringing them, is bringing the viewership back in the early 90s, and she's bringing them to the viewers.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like that for years and years, I feel like the people were always like counter-programming, like, oh, we've got this halftime show, or go to MTV for this halftime show. And now I feel like nobody does that.
Yeah, it's really hard to compete with the Super Bowl. And also MTV and VH1, they haven't played a music video in 20 years. So they forgot where they came from. But J-Lo did not. You know, again, I wonder if she knows the connection, because that's pretty cool. I don't think she was on In Living Color in 1993. I think she was a little bit after that.
Maybe. It's the only part of the Super Bowl that I watch.
Not even the commercials?
I like to know about the commercials, but I don't get excited about the Super Bowl commercials. I think it's weird to get excited about people selling you things.
Agreed.
I won't watch it with the same way anymore.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm here to ruin everything about football for everybody. That's why I was put on this earth.
I thoroughly enjoy the halftime show, and I watch it every year. So, you know, I'm glad that Dr. Amanda still likes one.
I like that part. So how do you feel, Chappelle, that this halftime show stacks up with other halftime specials? Because I want to talk about like what the content of J-Lo's halftime show is.
I think J-Lo and even and Beyonce recently, they both were really pushing a message in their halftime shows. Beyonce with her Lemonade album was, you know, she was doing a lot of like hard work and like trying to talk about like Black women and women's empowerment. And I think J-Lo really saw this as an opportunity in a time where there was like political and racial unrest in the country, which I mean, it's still that, but it was very like, you know, very toxic at that time, like to the point where you couldn't even turn off, like you couldn't get away from it. And so she felt like she needed to use the opportunity to kind of highlight some of the issues that were important to her and to empower Latina women and Latinas and Latino people in general in Miami, and kind of just be true to the culture of that area and true to herself. And so I think like in a vacuum, it's a good performance. Like, I don't know, like if you like could rank Super Bowl performances, like, I don't know if you can do that with like an unbiased lens. Mm-hmm. Like for me, if you like an artist, you like an artist, right? Like, I don't know if how much, like what can Tom Petty do to really get yourself above Beyonce in a lot of people's eyes? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's Tom Petty. He's a legend, but it's not Beyonce. So, you know, I don't know if I can rank them, but I really do think it was a good Super Bowl performance. It would have been better if I'd been in it, but you know, I didn't get the call. Somehow they lost my number, whatever. We'll talk about that.
It was my major complaint with it, for sure.
Thank you, because I definitely get salty every time a Super Bowl performance happens, because my grandmother, she's so sweet. Aww. She's like, are you in this one too? Like, no granny, I'm not in this one. I'll never be in another one again. Sorry, don't look. Your friends at bingo.
Yeah, so they paint this as like, you know, so she creatively, like her vision for this is against like the backdrop of the Trump presidency and the family separation at the border, and you know, the kids were being detained. And so this was, you know, to her, she sort of speaks about her own background and not being an artist who was ever particularly political, but that this like spoke to her.
She made songs about love.
Only songs about love. Yeah. That's she doesn't it. Like songs about politics or messages, but that this really issue spoke to her. And she said, you know, like with this platform, she felt like it was important for her to say something. And again, you know, Rob, you pointed out the NFL was having this, you know, kind of this image problem with the Colin Kaepernick issue, and also, you know, a lot of the Trump supporting owners. And so there was this sort of tension of like wanting to kind of have this message that might be more unifying, and then, you know, J-Lo wanting to take this platform and really elevate it to send a message about, you know, that our country should be inclusive, and that, you know, nobody should be, you know, that these children should be welcomed. We're a country of immigrants, and to sort of highlight those issues. So I think that she makes a lot of like ambitious choices here. And like some of the things, you know, that like you might not have like appreciated on the initial viewing was like that she has, you know, she has these young women singers and like these girls who are, I think, mostly Latina, but that they're in these cages, and they're, you know, that's part of the stage setup here. She uses a Puerto Rican flag, like she wears an American flag, like a reversible American Puerto Rican flag to sort of represent her Puerto Rican heritage. She like has things organized with like, she has a woman, the symbol for female as like part of the stage. And it seems like the NFL pushed back against a number of these things. And I actually, this scene I really liked where she's on the phone with them and they're saying like, well, the female symbol we think is really kind of divisive and that people might feel like they're not included. And she's like, wait, I thought you were going to have a problem with the cages. Mm-hmm. The NFL is like, women? I don't know. But the way the documentary shows it, at least, is she gets this pushback and it's sort of like the force of her will in being uncompromised. She like still gets the show she wants. Like she keeps all of those things. So, I mean, I thought that was kind of remarkable that she had such a strong political vision and that, you know, at least the way it's shown in the documentary, she gets some NFL pushback, but she still like manages to get her message across.
Chappelle, do you remember this being a big thing at that time? Because I was like, as I was watching it back, I'm like, I have no recollection of this. And I'm like, I wonder, does the NFL eventually say, all right, you know, we can't scrap the cages. We can't do that. But then they're in the finished product.
Oh no, she definitely got like a lot of criticism after that performance. There were people talking about, well, why, if you're trying to empower women, why are you up here being a stripper? Why do you have kids around this? My child was watching the Super Bowl and oh my God, there was a lady on the pole.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
You know, but they did talk about the people being in cages and like, oh, like look at y'all trying to make things political again. And I think that's the problem with this. So J-Lo's goal was to make a statement, but also make it palatable. But when you take risks like this, you leave the opportunity for people who do not necessarily believe in your goal or your view to like nitpick at the things that don't matter. Right. So it's kind of like, she's like, look at these kids in cages. We should stop that. We should do unity, born in the USA. Mm-hmm. Remember, like all these things should be combined, like bringing us together. And they're like, but you're on a stripper pole, you know? And so they were very much able to like kind of push all the rest of that to the side.
But did you see Hustlers? I worked on that routine for months.
Yeah, exactly. And it was good. So I think that's probably the biggest issue that people saw afterwards was that like from the critics, they were saying like, one, it's so risque. Oh my God. Like, well, you got these kids in cages. Y'all are fear mongering. And you know, like y'all are so anti-Trump that you're bringing all this other stuff into it. But like if she really wanted to make her message, I think you kind of muddy it sometimes when you bring in like these other outside things as well. And so I think there was criticism from both sides of the argument. But I think overall, I'm glad that she kind of stuck to her guns, because the idea that they tried to like change that the day before the performance, they're crazy people. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I would have hung up the phone. Like they would have had to legit like tell me I could not perform during
that's what she and did.
The thing that seems weird about it to me is that the fact that the NFL would not have known about that until such a late date. That part does not sound right to me. Like, I feel like that, you know, that's so much scrutiny. You think that the NFL wouldn't have known?
I was present for Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake. Yeah. And I tell you,
they don't have wardrobe inspectors.
That's interesting. Yeah.
we practiced for 3 days straight, one of those days being in the rain. And at no point did Justin Timberlake reach over and do anything. And we didn't have people coming to us, even like as like the people, like the accompaniment. Nobody came to us and was like, what are y'all doing? Like we did our moves in front of the choreographer. We did our move. Like, I don't think I've ever like seen an NFL official at all. Like when we perform, like we learned everything. When I was in college, I think that's the one I remember best because we were more active in that one. But we performed it at school, and then we went to Dallas. We practiced it in front of the choreographer, and then the next day we practiced it at like off site, and then we came to the stadium and we practiced it one last time, and then we did it. There wasn't a lot of like, show me beforehand what you're going to do, but, you know, because you can see that they are practicing it up until the day of.
What about in the Super Bowl you did with Black Eyed Peas that was in the post Janet Jackson timeline. That I just feel like that this, because this was stagecraft. I mean, this was not just like
somebody's like manufacturing these cages and they're being shipped. Like it's like it seems like it's a lot to be blindsided. Like somebody's like paying the budget for.
Or do they not know that those are cages? Like I mean, they're like
they were sort of like if you squint, like maybe they're orbs. They were, like I don't know,
like domes. Yeah.
Is that a tulip
bulb? It wasn't like they brought in. Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't like they like he got the order for like we need 65 cages. Like, hold on, pause. What's going on over there with J-Lo? I think it probably gets up the ladder and they're like, okay, well, let me show you what she has planned. Like, so she has these cages. I'm sorry, what? Go back to that part. So yeah, no. Even like I said, the Black Eyed Peas. Well, I don't think at any point have I ever met an NFL official. You know, and so like we could have like randomly decided halfway through the show we were going to do something else. And I mean, what were they going to do? Like stop the halftime show. So yeah, I just think that it was going to make it to them eventually. Yeah, exactly. The Beyonce effect. Yeah. No, but you know, I think it was going to make it to them eventually. It just wasn't like front of mind to where they had to like address it right that second. And then they were still trying to work out the logistics of it. But then you just don't have a lot of time. You would be shocked at how little time you have to prepare for a Super Bowl performance. It's very quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a great show. I love the choices she made. I know that you can say that it's like, you know, you have the stripper pole and is this diluting the message about like about, you know, her message about, you know, no person should be illegal. Like, I do feel like from J-Lo's vision, it's like this is something and this is something that she says about why Hustlers was meaningful for her. There's a lot of women who don't have choices, like don't have great choices in life. And when we like criminalize all of those choices, like the mother who tries to give her child a better life by crossing the border, or the woman who has to go into, you know, dancing or some other, you know, sex work to like support a family, it's like we are criminalizing people who we've sort of disenfranchised in all of these other ways. So I think that that's part of the message that was important to her. And I think that she like put it in a show that was still like very fun, very poppy, like very, you know, high energy and entertaining. So I thought it was very successful. I loved it. I think it's one of the better like halftime shows of recent years. Like if you like compare it to like, I mean, I love the last one too, but like, you know, they're all good, but I do feel like this one made an impact to me.
Even Maroon 5.
How dare you?
Maroon 5, yeah. Did they have to split the time?
I think they did. Yeah. they should have.
They had some other people there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think J-Lo has hits, like decades of hits. So she's definitely somebody who, if you tell them, put together 6 minutes of like the best J-Lo mix, like any DJ could have you dancing from the, you know, beginning to end, because she just has those songs. They're so catchy. The earworms, the dance tunes, you know.
Yeah.
You don't need a lot of power ballads from her or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You're just going to get the stuff that's fun and upbeat and very Miami, very party like centric. And, you know, and it fits the Super Bowl halftime show. So I don't think I have any issues with the show at all.
She has the line like there's hip hop J-Lo, there's funk J-Lo, there's Latin J-Lo, there's mama J-Lo, there's shoot me down, but I won't fall J-Lo. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's lots of sides to J-Lo. I don't think that J-Lo is the greatest singer in the history of recorded music. I'll just say like that. I don't think is her number one skill, but I think she puts on a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Great show. Yeah. I agree.
I thought one of the best parts of this was when J-Lo was working with the, you know, little girls who were going to be in the show, and she was like backstage with them. That was really cool to see. One of the young girls is talking about how she listens to her music. They just thought that was, you know, really something fun to get to see behind the scenes.
Yeah, I feel like J-Lo would be like your favorite, like first grade teacher. Like she would be, she'd be great. Wouldn't she be great,
yeah.
Ms. Lopez? And her daughter is the one who sings "Let's Get Loud" in like the end of her set, like which I thought was really cool. I think I missed that at the time that was actually her daughter Emmy. And so that was really great. I thought that all of the stuff with the little girls was adorable. Another thing that I do like want to call out is like J-Lo has this bejeweled water bottle that she carries around.
Yeah.
It's dehydrated. Like,
yeah.
One of her criticisms was like that people are like, oh, J-Lo is such a diva, this, that, and that. I'm like, she does not seem like a diva in this. And then she shows up with a bejeweled water bottle and the sunglasses on. I'm like, okay, you are giving diva energy. Mm-hmm. You might not be mm-hmm. a diva, but if I saw you from across the room, it wouldn't be out of the question for me to think that about you. Because that is a very shiny water bottle, mm-hmm. to say the least.
Yes. And I think that she even had like multiple of them, because I remember seeing one in a later scene. I was like, oh, wait, that's not the exact same one. She has more than one.
It's very flashy. I like it. I do appreciate it.
When you're J-Lo, you cannot drink out of a normal cup. You are.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no, it's
yeah, what would people think?
Exactly. Yeah, but even I appreciated that moment with J-Lo and those kids too. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about it, just kind of even like I'm not going to keep talking about like I was in two little worlds, but like the first time I did it, I was a child, and the second time I did it, I was an adult, and I got to be like, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, you know, like I could one day they would be cool if I was like these other performers, that would be dope. And then like to be on the other side, even then, to be like, wow, you really did it. And then like to see, we ran into a lot of kids. They bring in a lot of like local area acts and stuff to be like a part of the crowd a lot of times, which is how we got on the first time. And so like you get to meet these people and they like want to talk to you and stuff. And you're like, wow. Like, yeah. And they're like, oh my God, you were in the band there and you got to do such and such and such. And you're kind of like, oh yeah, thank you. And you know, so you never know how far that's going to go with those kids. And they met J-Lo. Like they'll never forget that. I think it's so yeah. dope.
The film really starts and it goes through J-Lo's career from an early age. Amanda, were there any parts of J-Lo's career that you didn't already know about that this film explored?
I mean, like, you know, so I, you know, getting more of her backstory, like it sounds like she left the house, like she left her home at a very young age and moved out and started, you know, pursuing her career as a dancer. And it really starts with The Fly Girls, I think. Was there anything before that? And
I don't think so.
Yeah, she left home and ran away to the Fly Girls.
And ran away to the Fly Girls, as you do. And let us not forget that the choreographer of the Fly Girls was Rosie Perez, which mm-hmm. is also amazing. Mm-hmm. And Living Color really was like Florence during the Renaissance in terms of talent there. Yeah. So then she goes, from like directly from the Fly Girls to Selena is like 1997. Like, I don't know if she did. Oh, between that, she's a dancer and she's in that Janet. She's featured in a Janet Jackson music video. Do you know this one, Chappelle? Is that That's the Way Love Goes?
Yes.
Yes. She's one of the back. So she was a background dancer for a while. And I did know this. I remember you can find her in that Janet Jackson video, which is a great video. And then she starts her movie career with Selena in 1997. And I really followed her early movie career very closely. And I actually think these are her best acting performances. Like, I think for people who say that J-Lo can't act, like, I think that she's great in Selena. Yeah. I think she's great in Out of Sight, like was a movie that I really, really loved. She's in Enough, she really shows quite a bit of range in her early career. And then I think that what happens is she becomes like a bit of a joke when she starts to make a series of kind of bad film choices. And it starts with Geely, where she meets Ben Affleck. And then I think that once she's dating Ben Affleck, her like sort of personal life takes over from her career, like really yeah. overshadows her career. And then, you know, she's making kind of like not great movies. People are really interested in who she's dating. Like, she's always been a fashion icon. There's a whole like series in the sequence of the film about that, the green Versace plunging neckline dress that she wore.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's also a big milestone on her in her career. The green dress, which was what is that 2001 or 2000? Yeah, I think it was February is a big month always for J-Lo. February 2000 at the Grammy Awards.
Yeah,
that she wears the dress 20 years later in 2020.
Yeah, in this documentary, they say that they created Google Images because of this green dress. That's so incredible.
Is that apocryphal? Again, this is according to J-Lo. Google images. I'm going to look up Google images on Wikipedia.
Can you Google Google images?
Google images. This is going to be confusing.
Google's
going to eat itself when you Google Google images. So, I mean, everybody remembers this dress, right? Like, if you were a cognizant human, you knew that J-Lo wore this dress.
Yeah. All right, so according to this, the history of Google images, in 2000, Google search results were limited to simple pages of text with links. Google's developers worked on developing this further, and they realized that an image search tool was required to answer the most popular search query they had seen to date, the green Versace dress of Jennifer Lopez worn in February 2000.
Wow.
Ring a bell, Rob. She wasn't wrong. Yes. There you go. Look.
That's better than an Oscar.
Right. This whole movie should be about Google images.
Exactly.
Yeah, Helen of Troy was the face that launched 1,000 chips, and Jennifer Lopez's dress like launched a whole search engine.
Look, J-Lo is getting a lot of crap throughout this film, but you don't see people making search engines to find out what the hell Kevin Costner is doing. Like,
what was Laura Dern wearing?
Right, because there's a lot of actresses.
You don't need Google image search to find Jimmy Kimmel, I'll tell you that.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of actors and actresses that have a good run of these horrible ass movies that J-Lo could have easily been cast in. I'm looking at you, Kate Hudson. And so, you know, like, let's not be so hard on her and say she's not a good actress because she had some questionable roles, because questionable roles happen, Gerard Butler.
She didn't write the movie.
They just do.
Yeah.
Right. you do what makes you money. And like she said at one point that her acting roles were like, they were limited because people were looking at her as more of a celebrity than an actress. So they weren't the person she wasn't the person you thought of when you thought of who do I want in this film.
Right.
And so, like I said, there are people who could be admonished for their roles. I don't think J-Lo should be the face of that, because I could name some people. Okay.
Amanda, did Jennifer Lopez go away at any point? Because that she talked about how when she had kids, and then American Idol was the first thing that she did when she came back. Was there a stretch with no J-Lo for a period of time?
So, I mean, I think so. There's definitely a stretch where I stopped following her career. And if I look at her filmography, you sort of see that she has her early 2000 hits. We have Geely in 2003. And let's see, like, when is...
If I had to guess, everything was probably started to like maybe take a turn around time she turns around 40. So that being like in 99. So Amanda, I would be shocked if that's not kind of where you see shift start subtly.
So she does Jersey Girl in 2004. I see that she's in like the, so it does seem like there's a gap, and you know, she does have twins and that she's raising. So I think that it does look like she does have a gap in her film career, and she really talks about in the documentary about American Idol being like her opportunity to sort of reintroduce herself to the world, like where people could sort of see her, and that gave her kind of her career a jump start and allowed her to get back in the game.
Yeah, and then 2010 is when she comes back on American Idol.
So 2009 is probably around the time where it was like maybe not a lot of J-Lo. I mean, because if you think about it, what the 2000s were, Jersey Girl, Geely, Monster in Law. Again, she really was like, I could be a white lady. the backup plan was 2010. So yeah, she went through a little run of just like, you know, you could insert any random actress into some of these roles and they work. But I think, after American Idol, I think she really started to like reinvigorate her career a little bit. I don't know if she's done a lot of movies that I've seen in recent years that I really like that stood out. I know, what was it, Lila and Eve? I think people were talking about very highly. But as far as I'm concerned, like most of like the 90s, the like Anaconda and stuff like that, that's really the J-Lo I remember. The Cell, maybe. I don't know what that was.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of my J-Lo.
And most recently, Marry Me.
Yeah, that was a big was that on Nothing But Netflix?
No, I believe it was on Peacock.
That's okay.
And it was also on Celebrity Big Brother 3.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
remember that one, Chappelle?
No. I tapped out around the face writing. Is that before
it was, it was like the second week. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yes. So
it was a very long, short season for me.
Long, short season.
So look, I mean, and it's like it is very hard as an actress to transition from the young ingenue phase to being able to play older, more mature roles. And I think J-Lo specifically, like in the way that the media saw her and like the way that she was so sexualized, like I'm sure that it was difficult for her to kind of continue working as she's like now a mother of two, you know, getting into her 40s and now 50. Although it's like, you could tell me that J-Lo was 35 and yeah, I would believe it. Like, she's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chappelle, anything else that you learned about J-Lo on Halftime?
About J-Lo specifically, not really. I mean, we got to see a little bit about her upbringing, and we learned about her mom and dad and how she had three sisters. And even when she was a little, you know, a little girl, she wasn't the singer of the group with her sisters. They were both like known as singers, but she always wanted to be kind of like a triple threat. You know, she really liked that her mom watched a lot of like Broadway shows, and she really got into that.
Yeah,
West Side Story was her kind of like her jam. But it was just kind of, she said it was like almost escapism because her portion of New York was so dark to her. Mm-hmm. She was like, it wasn't a lot of color over there and stuff like that. But you could get into these roles and you could kind of live a different life. And that was what was motivating her. J-Lo said she was never motivated to be the best of anything, right? She was never trying to be like the most award winning actress or singer or dancer or whatever. Yeah. She just wanted to be able to tell stories that were meaningful to her and to make people feel good, and you know,
it should have accomplished.
I do. I think she did a really good job with that. And so I think that if this documentary, if that was the purpose of this, I think she accomplished her goal and probably and then some, because I don't know if you can walk away from this like having a real big dislike for J-Lo. She did a really good job propping herself up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Like the places where I think I think that this is very much her story told from her perspective, which is very valuable. Like, I think that it's good to hear that. Like, I was like, when they cut together all of like the late night punchlines and all of this stuff, I mean, like, I did feel like, man, I mean, it's like really terrible the way that like this industry can kind of like grind people up and spit them out. And like, you know, I think we can all relate to like, you know, criticism hurts. Like, it's not fun to hear. So it tells that story, I think, in a very kind of compelling way that I felt a lot of empathy for her. Like, you know, J-Lo has some girl boss energy. She has some diva energy. Like, you know, she's, you know, the documentary, like a little bit sort of, she like maybe tells on herself and just sort of like how much she, you know, kind of, she's a perfectionist and she really like is requiring to get this like sort of universal praise. But I think it's all very human, and you can tell that this woman, like she works her butt off like to, you know, sort of be a good performer, to be the best that she can be. And like, I find all of that like very laudable. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I had warm and fuzzies like leaving the end credit card. I thought was like a little bit eye rolly when she sort of like it posts like she has this many social media followers. And then like, it sort of ends with like, she's partnering with Goldman Sachs or something. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, J-Lo. All right. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think given like, you can really respect that this is somebody who worked really hard to build up the career that she has. And like, I think she deserves all the success that she has gotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody's not going to be the best singer or the best actress or the best at anything, right? Like, you don't have to be the best, but I think J-Lo's story does show like that if you work really hard and you apply your skills that you do have, then you will be noticed in the right way. Like when she started to be a dancer, she had no clue that Selena was going to be like the thing that she ends up doing. You know, she's not even a Mexican woman. So it was a controversy behind that when Selena was happening. People were like, why, she's not Mexican, so who is this girl? Why is she playing Selena? And she was able to take that and flip it. And, you know, people like J-Lo and Selena were synonymous for an amount of time in Hollywood. And then she just skyrockets in different areas. And, you know, I think there's something commendable about being able to say, well, I might not have the natural gift that all these other people have, but I can use what I have and try to get as far as I can with that. And, you know, she doesn't let up. She's been going strong for over 30 years. And it doesn't look like if she doesn't want to stop, she doesn't have to. She's in great shape. She looks gorgeous and she still got it. So I'm happy for her after watching this documentary. I feel really good about it. Warm and fuzzies for me too.
And yeah. Jennifer Lopez got rave reviews from both Siskel and Ebert.
Oh, yeah.
For Selena. They both loved her. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned was that Jennifer Lopez, like myself, comes from a family of New York Jets fans.
Go Jets. Go yes. Jets.
Yes. Look,
they could barely focus on her Golden Globe nomination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the because Jets they were like, missed an extra point.
Yeah. And I was like, Rob somewhere is like feeling this in his soul.
Yeah. Rob, yes. You got to get in on that group text.
I got to get in. Boy, I'm just happy, you know, for once that the Jets weren't in the Super Bowl that year, because I don't think that J-Lo's family could have even paid attention to her performance.
They would have missed it. Yeah.
They would have been so distracted. Like, we can't talk right now. Mm-hmm. Go Jets. That's our true love. Not you, J-Lo. That's probably why they like West Side Story so much.
Because of the Jets. They do say that J-Lo was the black sheep of the family, so how can she how can she compete with the Jets? The documentary closes at the Biden inauguration where she sang and I thought that was great. Like, J-Lo sings "This Land Is Your Land," which is by Woody Guthrie, which I think is the most badass of the America songs. And then she says "One Nation."
Sounds like a tier list.
Yeah, we should do it. And then she says "One Nation Under God" in with "Liberty and Justice for All" in Spanish. And ends with "Let's Get Loud." Which I thought was really great. So it's like, it's, you know, I'm glad that even though J-Lo didn't get her Oscar nomination, she did do the halftime special. She was at the Biden inauguration. Like, I'm glad she's getting the respect she deserves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Will there be Hustlers 2?
I hope so.
So Hustlers is based on a true story.
Oh.
So I don't know we know that they all get... They're not, like, none of them really served any time, so they can keep it going.
Well, I did hear, not to make this negative about J-Lo, but I did hear there was some wonkiness in the production of that, so maybe we won't do a Hustlers 2.
Uh-oh. It wasn't.
There were some questions. This is not what this is about. And go check out Halftime on Nothing But Netflix.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, check out Halftime on Netflix. We don't have to talk about Hustlers.
J-Lo's got a few movies in pre-production, according to the IMDb.
Oh, what should we be looking out for?
She's got one called The Mother.
Okay.
While fleeing from dangerous assailants, an assassin comes out of hiding to help protect her daughter. She left it earlier in life. So maybe that could be some Oscar buzz there with that one.
Maybe. Please, Academy, give this woman an Oscar.
give her something. Looks like she's the lead in The Mother.
Okay. Ooh, what if she's up against Laura Dern again for this Jurassic World?
Not great.
Laura Dern. That's a tough one. Let J-Lo live.
Yeah.
Okay. And then she got some other ones. Maybe like she does, she's like one for me, one for you with the movies.
Okay. I mean, now that I've seen this, I could check out some J-Lo projects in the future. I might be more invested now.
How about Shotgun Wedding coming up, starring J-Lo, that with Josh Duhamel and Jennifer Coolidge?
Oh, we love Jennifer Coolidge.
My mother.
People want to talk about people who take questionable roles, and then we just say Josh Duhamel and just breeze on past it.
Cheech Marin. An all-star cast in Shotgun Wedding.
Oh, Darcy Carden, who's from The Good Place. Very fun.
A couple's extravagant destination wedding is hijacked by criminals.
I just found out about The Good Place recently. It's on my watch list. People see me on Twitter trying to figure out if it's a comedy or not. I will report back when I find out.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
She's got some other projects going on. All right. Anything else on Halftime?
No, I had a great time.
Yeah. I think we covered it. I'm very glad I watched it. I'm very glad I got to process everything and work through. Like, so we can still love Shakira and J-Lo. We don't have to choose. They're not in a fight.
Okay.
Right. As far as we know, until we see Shakira's documentary. Well,
yeah, Shakira comes back. Yes.
Halftime part two.
Chappelle, did they need an interview with Patrick Mahomes to hear their, like, when we heard J-Lo, that really gave us the support we needed to come back on these 49ers.
No. The 49ers pissed that Super Bowl away, and you can't tell me different. Patrick Mahomes did not win that Super Bowl. The 49ers gave that to him. I've never been so disgusted in a Super Bowl performance in my life.
Amanda, also on that very same night, Baby Nut was born. Do you think that we needed to hear and check in with Baby Nut?
Baby Nut. Is Baby Nut...
I know
Peanut's baby. Mr. Peanut's baby. Yes, yeah.
Josh Wiggler.
Yeah. No, this is terrifying. Yeah. I'm surprised. I was surprised that wasn't covered in halftime. I was also surprised that the Wanda song parody, Jenny from the Brawn, I thought that was going to get some attention. Mm-hmm. That was glossed over somehow. I don't know if you caught this. I was just looking over my notes, but J-Lo's daughter had a petition that got 156 signatures. Yeah. And I was like, oh, what is she getting a petition for? She wants a gecko. So I don't know. Would that work on you, Rob, if like one of your kids brought you a petition?
156 signatures? No, not enough.
Why is that not enough? Look,
what if they were 5-star reviews for nothing but Netflix?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I think put Davey on the list of greatest survivor nerds had way more than that.
That's my petition. I know.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll buy the gecko if we can keep Davey off the list.
Chappelle, we haven't looked ahead to what's next on Nothing But Netflix. Maybe Dr. Amanda can help us take a look at what's coming up here on Netflix.
Yeah, first I want to thank Dr. Amanda because this is like the quickest turnaround. I think one of the quickest turnarounds on Nothing But Netflix that we've had for one of our guests. And so thank you so much for doing a lot of the heavy lifting here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I was afraid that I would oversaturate the Nothing But Netflix audience and people were going to say like, why is she back on? We don't want to hear from her. But as long as you guys are happy to talk with me, I'll come on.
No, Rob was like, what are people going to say? We got too much Dr. Amanda. I was like, no, Rob, I don't think anybody would ever say that. What are you talking about? So as long as you were happy you were come back, then we are happy to have you.
Too kind.
But I'm looking at the top 10 movies in the US today. Number one is Hustle, which we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Number two is Halftime, which we've talked about.
Wow, that's a Nothing But Netflix bump.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. Top two, baby.
Number three is called Chicken Hair and the Hamster of Darkness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. That's number three.
That's number three.
If anybody has any suggestions for what we're going
to
watch.
All right. Well, some interesting things coming to Netflix in the next little bit. Okay. This is interesting. It looks to be, it's labeled as reality TV. Chappelle, have you heard about Snowflake Mountain?
I don't know why I thought you were going to say Squid Game.
No,
Squid Game. I haven't heard about that.
According to this, coming June 22nd, hopelessly entitled or simply in need of tough love, 10 spoiled young adults experience nature without a parental safety net in this reality series. Looks like it's British also. Mm. That's coming this week.
Yeah, it says it's about a bunch of kidults.
Mm-hmm.
Kidults.
Yes.
Kidults. Okay.
Looks like Snoop Dogg has a comedy special. Coming.
Okay.
Another halftime star.
Mm-hmm.
Another halftime star, yes. There is a show out, Rob, and I know we've been moving away from doing whole series because it's just a lot.
Yes.
But we do have a vampire enthusiast in our network who would like to talk about First Kill, which is the number two television show in the U.S. after Stranger Things. And it is about, says, falling in love is tricky for teens Juliet and Calliope. One's a vampire, the other's a vampire hunter, and both are ready to make their first kill. So if you ever want to go down that route, I already have the guest in mind. They've reached out.
Okay. But it's a lot of episodes for a Nothing But Netflix podcast.
I think we could do like the premiere. You know, like it's not like it's on the second season or nothing like that. So we could probably do like episode one, maybe episode one and two. You know, we've done that before.
Yeah. Man versus B also still coming June 24th.
Oh, can't wait.
Putting it out there. So do you want to see what the listeners say or do you want to make a call?
No, I like to see what the listeners say. Sometimes they open my mind to like different things I hadn't even considered. Like, what is Brahms the Boy 2? Like, that's a scary movie. Yes. We don't talk about horror much. We did talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That was a good time.
Is anybody clamoring for the My Little Ponies?
Oh yeah, we did get some people saying about the My Little Pony.
We got a couple, but honestly, it wasn't powerful enough. I don't think we got. I wanted to know like a swell of support for the My Little Ponies, for the Bronies, and they didn't really come out.
Right.
So I think until they show the support, like I mean, this is no Beyond the Edge, but until they show the support, I don't know if we give them My Little Pony yet. We need to know.
I mean, more people were asking for the Doogie Howser, What Did We Learn This Week segment on Renap.
Exactly.
Not to mention Emmy's Gecko.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we need at least a petition at this point. Yeah.
Okay. Let us know what you think for next week on Nothing But Netflix. By the way, I watched the Bob Saget tribute, and I definitely don't think it's a podcast. I don't even think it should have been a Netflix special.
Oh, wow. My gosh.
Oh, Bob Saget deserves better, Netflix. Yeah. Come on.
I thought it was a tough hang. I do think everybody's heart was in the right place. Okay. All right. Dr. Manda, you don't want to put your thumb on the scale for anything?
Jeez. I mean, I'm excited about that Mr. Bean versus the Bean.
Yes.
I think that would make for good podcasting. Is that going to be ready in time for the next?
I don't think, maybe not. It depends on when we record again, but I think it's probably 2 weeks away.
Chappelle just rolled his eyes at me.
I'm not anti-bean. I'm just not a bean head. I just, you know, I just don't understand what he's giving. It's not giving.
Yeah, well, you need to get those thoughts out into the universe, Chappelle. You need to broadcast the anti-bean, represent the anti-bean
I'm not anti-bean. I'm bean agnostic and bean questioning why.
It's a lot of...
I'm not bean shaming. I'm bean asking why. That's all. I just don't understand. Maybe it's not for me. I'm just gonna assume it's not for me.
Yeah,
for now.
Yeah.
But if the people want it, I'll suffer through it.
The Brits love it.
The Brits. They're always trying to foil me.
Okay. All right. There's also a new movie coming to Netflix for June 24th, starring Kevin Hart and Woody Harrelson.
Oh,
called The Man from Toronto.
That's interesting. Do we need to have a man from Toronto as our guest that week?
You can find a man from Toronto.
Yeah.
we know a few.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let us know what you want us to talk about next time. Dr. Amanda, what are you podcasting about these days?
Let's see. Well, I'm between projects right now, but I will be starting, and I'll just tease it for post show recaps. I'm going to be covering Loot, which is a Maya Rudolph comedy, which is coming at the end of June. I'm going to be covering that with Ariel Gomez. I'm very excited to be podcasting with Ariel. So that's coming up. So just follow me on Twitter at Dr. Amanda R and you'll see what's going on with that. And I was also very honored to be a guest on the Brazilian Dragon podcast, talking to Felipe. It's the first part of a two-part series where we had a conversation and he pitched me different kids movies that I could watch with my kids. We went through a list and picked one, and then I'm going to come back to talk about what we picked with Felipe, I think coming up next week. So that's what I have going on right now.
Okay. All right. And Chappelle, what's going on for you?
Chilling, hanging out with you.
Chilling.
Yeah, you and I, we have recently recorded our finally giving the people what they wanted, the Celebrity Exorcism podcast we've been clamoring for with Jenny Autumn.
Well, who has it better than me that I've done back-to-back podcasts with Chappelle tonight?
Wow.
Stop it. Stop it. I'm
the dream. It's truly the dream. My pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Doc. Let me know, Doc, if you ever need me to come and guest with you on your Pro Shot Recaps project, let me know. I'll pop in. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I'm down. I like to visit. But Celebrity Exorcism was a good time. And so hopefully people can check that out and give us feedback on what you thought about that show that the people demanded, the Edge Lords and the Edge Ladies. Also, I've been talking about 90 Day Fiance with Puya, where, you know, this week we talked about the foolishness of that show, the Hot Mess Express and all that good stuff. And so check that out as well. I'm also on the Purple Pants podcast every week talking with Bryce and Sharia about P-Valley Season 2. This week we talked about episode 2, so check that out on Pro Pants Podcast. Subscribe to that as well. And I'm over in Silent Podcast talking about Abbott Elementary and Survivor this week with Gia, Jason, and we are going to be talking about the the crossover event of a century. Like, what Survivor seasons does Ava from Abbott Elementary watch during her quarantine? And so that'll be out soon enough. And then I guessed it on
the 90s. I don't think she's going to choose wisely.
Well, we're going to talk about that because, you know, Ava has an interesting taste, but we do too over in Silent Podcast. And so we might support her or we might admonish her. Just depends on what we come up with. So check that out as well. And then I'm on the Shit 90 Shows Taught Me podcast with Sarah Ferguson and Jess Sterling this week to talk about Boy Meets World Season 6, Episode 7, I believe. And so if you are a fan of Boy Meets World or at least a fan of me or Jess or Sarah, go check that out. Mm-hmm. Subscribe to all those podcasts or follow me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show, where I'll tweet out all the links as they come up.
All right. Check out that. Check out what we talked about last time, where we talked about the brand new Adam Sandler movie, Hustle, that is available in our Netflix podcast feed. Go to robswebsite.com/Netflix feed and check out everything else we have going on over at robhasawebsite.com. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.